could you hold on to the microphone? Oh, yeah. And you can start off, lead off on the next question, which is, from your perspective, what are the drawbacks of the process?
Okay. I have to get my head together here. All right. The biggest drawback of the Nordic proposal, and unfortunately of the whole oceans proposal, is that the level of knowledge that we need and that our regulatory community needs to accurately and adequately consider these kinds of enterprises is still too low. That's our biggest problem right now. Which is not to say that Nordic could not design, build, and operate a plant that would essentially be a net positive for our region. They probably could. But we're not asking them to do that yet. And I'm not confident that under our current regulatory structure, we'll be able to ask them to do that. And that's why I'm working with Upstream Watch, and other folks are too, to try and really make the regulatory process as strong as we possibly can. Because Nordic has come in, they, in my opinion, have worked in a top-down fashion to get this project off the ground. And I think they made a strategic mistake in not really involving the citizens of Belfast a little sooner than they did. If you compare the reception that Nordic got in Belfast with the reception that Whole Oceans has received in Bucksport, you'll see that the way these two companies have gone about dealing with local citizens has been very different. I made some comments for the record on the Bucksport proposal. They didn't particularly have any effect, but I got a call from the CEO of Whole Oceans after I submitted my comments for the record. And he asked me to come down and sit with him and his inner circle, including the city manager, Susan Lessard, who is actually a Belfast resident, but she's the city manager in Bucksport. So she sees both of these facilities and the controversy they're generating. And he didn't have to do that, you know? I mean, my comments went into the record, but they didn't really change the way that permitting process is going, at least not so far. But I don't think that Nordic has made that kind of an approach or an attempt to reach out to the opponents of this facility. And I think I understand why. It's very large. It is capitally financed largely from Norway. And they are playing on a global market. And as environmentally conscious and as environmentally friendly as I think they want their plant to be, this facility will ultimately be driven by market forces overseas.
1 minute?
Okay. So, again, the regulatory process needs to be strengthened. We need to see a little bit more out of Nordic in terms of what they're really planning. And one of the things we don't know, for example, is we still don't know what's going to be in the food they're going to feed their fish. If we don't know what's in the food, we can't tell what the constituents are that are going to come out in the wastewater. So we don't know whether or not the treatment processes that they're proposing are going to protect the waters and the marine life that they're discharging to. So there's a lot that needs to be done. I am cautiously optimistic that we will get a regulatory process that will produce the kind of information we need to make those good decisions. But until we do that, I can't support this farm.
Okay, thank you. Kathleen, from your perspective, what are the drawbacks of the project?
Could you put that first slide? I'm going to get a little science-y wonky here on you, but I do have some specific concerns about water quality issues. So the information I'm talking about is just from the application itself, which is available on the DEP website. You can all see that. So The effluent concentration is estimated to be 23 milligrams per liter of nitrogen. And remember what I said before, we lack nitrogen in most coastal and estuarine areas. Freshwater is usually phosphorus limited. These coastal areas, marine areas, are nitrogen limited. So when you add nitrogen, things bloom, because that's all, they're just waiting for it. They have everything else. So the nitrogen input is estimated to be 23 milligrams per liter in the effluent. The DEP estimate of the average ambient concentration is 0.17 milligrams per liter. So that's 135 times ambient. So if you just think about that, you'll need to dilute that 7.7 million gallons per day 135 times. That's about 1,500 Olympic swimming pools. That seems like a lot, but whether or not that can be diluted depends on a lot of things, including the bathymetry, the currents, the flow in the area. The Penobscot, for example, discharges about 10 billion gallons a day on average. So just to put that in perspective, the studies they've provided by independent companies say that the dilution will be enough. But there's something specific in the application that worries me a little. So the DEP is suggesting, and this is pretty much a common guideline, that anything above point... Oh, I have one here. I'm good. Oh, is that a pointer?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the control. Let's see. How do I do this? Great. Okay, so do I get 10 seconds back for that? So if you look here, this is total nitrogen. This is an independent company that did some water quality analysis as part of the application. So ambient levels of concern are above 0.4 milligrams per liter. Something stands out right away here is that we're already above that with ambient measurements. The dilution studies in the application assume that ambient is 0.17 milligrams per liter, which is that average DEP number. I would like to know why is it so different? And this does happen sometimes. They only went out one day. It does happen that some strange occurrence, like somebody's super yacht goes by and they empty all their waste that day. There are reasons why you might see a very high number like that. But I believe that we need to do more monitoring to determine if that is an anomaly or is that really the ambient level. And if it is, then that dilution study, you can't dilute something lower than what it already is in the ambient water. So that's a question I have that I'm curious to get the answer to. The other thing I'm concerned about from that ambient study is the DO and pH in the ambient water. And again, excuse me for getting all technical here, but if you look at these graphs, the left-hand axis is depth from top to bottom. So you're looking at the side of the water column. If that makes sense. So above me is temperature, and over here is specific conductance, which is a proxy for salinity. You can think of it that way. You can see there's a sharp break where it starts going down at around 6 meters. That is suggestive of stratification. Stratification can keep that low DO and pH that forms at the bottom from rotting stuff, like we talked about earlier. It can keep it at the bottom and keep the water from mixing. But if you look at these DO, this is 6 milligrams per liter. The level where we get concerned is at 5. So in ambient waters, from this study, we're not very far from that. And also the pH, 7.6, is considered pretty low. And of all of the areas that MCOA monitors, we rarely see dissolved oxygen that low. So these are concerns that jump out at me. And I didn't have time to prep in my prep to look at the other chemicals that might be going into the system, but my feeling is even net pen farms don't use antibiotics in Maine anymore because they have developed much better methods. So I don't think that a land-based system would, there's no way they would use more. They would use less. So I am more concerned about the nutrient input than I am about specific chemicals. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. All right, Eric, from your perspective, what are the drawbacks of the project?
Thank you. First thing is, this is why I only took earth science in high school, so I'm really glad you're here. Sad but true. The drawbacks from my point of view, maybe via the city, is a company comes in, makes the deal, buys the land with the Belfast Water District, and builds these huge cement ponds, and then fails. Let's just put it right out there. They invest the first stage, I think, where they were talking $150 million investment. And maybe something globally changes or things like that, or there's some scientific issues, and they fail and they walk away. I don't have an answer to that drawback. And I'm not sure that anybody in the room does. You know, somebody said, oh, those would make really nice medicinal marijuana growing. I was like, all right. But I would see it more as, I don't know if anybody saw the old TV show Lost, where the plane crashed and they're in this weird place, and there would be this 30 or 40 acres of really strange buildings. The city's commitment financially, off the top of my head, in total, I think has been around $120,000 spread out over 6 years for some piping into the city from the water district. So I guess we would lose some aspect of that. I think the Belfast Water District was guaranteed 100 million gallons of use a year. Again, off the top of my head, it could be 200 million, but I think it's 100 million. And the cost of that, with no discount given, was $287,000 a year that they would lose. If it didn't, so there are definitely some financial concerns. And then the other thing would be that if it doesn't work here, it sounds like it probably wouldn't be working, I would think, in Bucksport. I would imagine the two of them would be working concertedly to make sure that they both, if an idea works really well up there, in what I view as a landlubber, a more dangerous area of the bay, if you will. I've heard of mercury sediment and things like that up there. So I think there are drawbacks to that. But I think that what Andrew said originally in terms of being cautiously optimistic, that's how I view the project, because I think the future of, if not Maine, the Mid-Coast would benefit from this type of aqua farming and income and jobs. But it is definitely a question in my mind. The other drawback, which has been expressed considerable times over the length of this discussion, is the loss of the trail. There's a trail that runs from Perkins Road down, and I've hiked it. You know, the company has said that they would even build aluminum brushed facing so that if you were to look at the building, you would see the forest. You know, etc. But it wouldn't be the same as it is today. If it failed, I guess the trail would come back, but if it succeeds, the trail would not be as meaningful to some people as it is today. I don't know how else to put it. I look at it from the state is covered with 80% of forest, and I know that trail is very important to a lot of people. Skip Pendleton, who I would hope someday we name that trail and others after, was the gentleman who showed up at my door to hang my campaign signs the first time I ran for office, and I'd never met him. He's like, give me your signs, I'm going to go put them up. And I'm like, okay. The loss of that trail as it is today is something that people have been talking about a lot. So financially, sure, there would be drawbacks to a big investment and then disappearing. Other drawbacks would be, what if it doesn't work? What if the algae blooms? What if a fish goes through the pipe? I don't know the answer to that, except I would hope they would put wire netting up at the end. So
It's a 0.4 micron filter.
Okay, thank you. I think I should stop there. Expertise. Thank you.
All right, you can hold on.
Oh, good.